This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Good morning, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be, here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live, here for you, here for your pets, and to answer any questions you may have, even make up some questions, Tom. That's okay, too. Remember, anything that you think that you need to talk about and you think it's so weird, trust me, it's not weird. I mean, I've been down this path. Sometimes I'm so embarrassed. Sometimes the questions are so normal for me, I can tell from when they just start asking. They haven't even gotten to the meat of the question yet, and I'm able to tell them, you know, what's going on. So anyway, for those of you here on Instagram Live, you just have to ask away. I'm waving. Those of you on Pet Life Radio, you can reach me 877-385-8882. Once again, calling in 877-385-8882, toll free. Or better yet, hopefully you're here already. You're here on the video portion and not just the audio portion. You can get your pet, your dog or cat on your lap next to you and ask away. So let's get some questions going. First of all, it's here in LA, a little overcast. Bethany, you're going to love this one. Actually, this afternoon, invited to a wedding. Her name is Anna Farr. And Beth, if you remember Mrs. Farr, who used to service lunches at school, her granddaughter is getting married. So how crazy is that? And I was at her son's wedding that when I went to Tennessee about a couple of months ago. That was the son, the grandson. And now this is little sister. And that's so funny. When I first met him, I said, oh, my God, Farr, that's a name I know. This woman who used to service lunches in elementary school. Her name is Farr. He looks at me and goes, that's my grandmother. So anyway, very, very funny. So question, is there a certain age to stop getting senior bloods for your dog? And my answer is absolutely not. Let me qualify. Sometimes if we know from a prior test or from another, not just bloods, but let's say from an X-ray or an ultrasound or an MRI, that the dog is heading to something terminal and its life is now starting to really decline, what are we going to learn from a test that we don't already know? Even if the bloods still come back fine, and they sometimes do with certain cancers don't affect the bloods. So you know, people say, well, we'll know from the blood work, won't we? No, the only cancer we'll know from the blood work is going to be a blood cancer, like a leukemia, or a cancer affecting an organ that we know, for example, there's a tumor in the liver, and then we start getting liver enzymes that are off the charts, then we know, yes, that will be indicated by a blood test. But there are cancers out there that just don't affect the blood at all. You know, people always are shocked. We go, how come his bloods are normal? His bloods are normal because there's nothing to do with the bloods. But in advanced stages, almost any disease, any cancer, you're going to probably see some abnormalities in the blood. But the question is this, since where it comes to practical medicine versus academic medicine, I always say I'm not an academic medicine doctor. I am a practical doctor. So when you get to a point where if the result of a test is not going to change your approach to a case, then you have to ask yourself, why am I doing this test? Now, some pet parents have this need to know. They really want to know. And in that case, it's fine. But if it's not going to change your approach, you already know you have a 17-year-old dog that is failing. Who cares what the blood show? I mean, the question is, are you able to do anything about it? Is this cancer taking over the dog? The dog is 17 years old. I mean, it's like when my Grover, I did a major surgery on him at 15. We've talked about this before. And he went to 16 and a half. But he started getting sick at 16 and a half. And I didn't even think it was the original tumor. What are we going to learn? I mean, he was not. A Labrador Retriever stops eating. That's a serious problem. That's sort of what we have. So depending on the breed, the size of the dog, I typically like to start senior bloods on an annual basis or sometimes twice a year. Dogs, the large breeds when they hit 7, small breeds and cats when they hit 8, that's when I consider it's time. And assuming up to this point, they are perfect. Of course, if the dog is, you know, showing up with a lot of problems at 5 and a half, of course you're going to do bloods. And with senior cats, by the way, I always include, and this is something I am very, very firm about, something not only the regular thyroid test, which comes with most senior panels, but a second test called the T4 by ED that is equilibrium dialysis. Here's why. Cats, as we know, as they get older, can suffer from a hyperthyroid state. And unfortunately, when animals are sick, dogs or cats, they might have a low thyroid called sick thyroid syndrome. So here you do, you have this cat that is rip roaring, right? Hyperthyroid, all the signs, eating a lot, losing weight, rapid heart rate, liver enzymes are elevated, classic. Even sometimes you're lucky enough to feel the thyroid nodule, all right? But so he has thick thyroid syndrome. If you just look at the regular T4, it's going to be on the low end probably because of sick thyroid syndrome. And you're thinking, well, not thyroid. In fact, if anything, I thought maybe hyperthyroid, but his thyroid's low. But then you do the ED and it's greater than 100. So yes, when it comes to cats or dogs that are the opposite, where you suspect hypothyroidism, their skin is thin, they're losing hair, it's greasy, they're getting skin infections, they're gaining weight, all the classic signs of hypo, low thyroid. And then you also want to do an ED because you need confirmation. You can't always go by just a T4 by itself. So the short answer to your question is, let's put this way, if they're around year after year, and now we're up to 14, 15, of course, you still want to do bloods because if you catch things early, there might be some things you can do about it, assuming everything else is normal. To me, age is not a disease. Rarely am I going to make a decision on a case, on how to handle the case, just because of age. That I disagree with. I have done surgeries on animals. So speaking of thyroid, before the radioactive iodine was in play, I would do thyroid surgery on a 17-year-old cat. I mean, age is not a disease. If they're healthy in any other way or every other way, then of course, I'm going to proceed with lab work. And yes, the spaghetti and meatballs were the best. All right. Wednesdays with spaghetti and meatballs. That's crazy. These crazy things we remember. It's nuts. Okay. I love this question. Do we wait for certain age to neuter your dog? Is a year too early? And again, great question. If you would have asked me this 6-7 years ago, I would have said 6 months. No. So we've learned a lot. And this is, you know, something that sort of resonates in my head is one of my mentors, Dr. Barbara Kitchell. This gal is really sharp. She was a resident when I was at Davis, and she was an internal medicine resident. And she did her internal medicine boards. And then she also combined that with oncology. So she was double boarded in medical oncology and internal medicine. Really dumb, right? Then for fun, she goes to Stanford for a PhD in comparative oncology. And I remember when she came back from that, I saw her at a conference and I asked, I said to Barb, what did you really get out of this PhD? She goes, I'll tell you what we got out of the most, how little we really understand cancer behavior. And that's crazy. And that's why things have changed. But I was a hot shot in school. And when we had our evaluations at the end of each, and I took her for 2 medicine residencies, and I did a lot of oncology, I mean, internships. And I also did one in when we had to, you know, do our senior rotations, and I did 2 oncology ones as well. We had to do some, and then you had electives. And I knew that Barbara was doing it, so I did it with her. And she goes, you know your stuff, yes, but understand one thing. Don't think you're such a hotshot, because every 5 years, half of what was gospel is going to be obsolete. So you got to keep learning. You got to stay on top of things. And those words stuck with me for now 40 years. So one thing I will say that we've learned a lot about the neutering thing. So first of all, I would say, what breed? What size of the dog? Is it a small breed or is it a big breed? And here's why. So there was a link. Now we've talked about this before, I believe, but for those of you new to my show, great information. They were studying Rottweilers. They were doing aging studies on Rottweilers. And that was just really looking at so many different parameters. And one thing, they weren't looking for this. It was just when the statisticians got a hold of all the data, they said, okay, what are we learning from this? 65% greater incidence in long bone cancer, osteosarcoma, in those dogs that were pre-pubertally neutered, and a 35% increase in the females that were pre-pubertally spayed. Wow. That's huge. So what it really changed our thinking, because my old school was I would neuter usually around 6 months or more as soon as the adult teeth were in. And the reason for that, which is why I never really liked the early spay neuter problems, understood why they had to be done, because a lot of the people that were rescuing these dogs from shelters and rescues, they used to sign a voucher, pay for it in advance, and then they would take their dog and come back already paid for the spay neuter. And guess what? They didn't. And that's why we're having. So then they said, you know what? We cannot trust people that are the adopters. We have to go ahead and we have to spay or neuter before they are released. and thus started the early spay-neuter programs. My issue with that was that many, especially small breeds, they end up not losing their baby teeth on schedule. They get double teeth called retained deciduous teeth. And in order to pull the baby teeth to allow for the occlusion to be normal, all right, and to minimize mouth problems because of dental crowding and the malalignment of teeth because of those retained baby teeth, we had to anesthetize. So you're anesthetizing it 3.5, 4 months, then you're going to do it again in 6 to 7 months? That's insane. So, especially given that usually most complications of surgery are not because of the actual surgery. It's because of the anesthesia. So why subject this poor little guy to two of them? So I always waited to 6 months. And then also, since the average female doesn't come into heat even until seven months, we used to do it again before their first heat. That was a great mammary cancer risk reduction. Let's do it. Great, fine, everything. Well, now with this new data and other behavior and problems associated with early spay on the female side, most of the experts, and I'm certainly not one of an expert, but I am certainly have a lot of experience. I now like to wait until females have their first heat cycle and get them before their second. So if we merge these two facts about mammary cancer and about preventing bone cancer in the, especially the medium and larger breeds, then I say, let them have one heat. And since it's usually around 7-8 months, next one's 14, 15 months, spay them at around between 11 and 13 months of age. The males, you can wait because you're not preventing really anything that early on. But what I say is for large and giant breeds, which actually are more slow to mature, I mean, if you give me that Newfie, I'll hang in there 18 months, maybe even 24 months before the neuter. And that's just me. You can do it earlier. So most dogs, I wait till around a year of age. If they're larger giant breeds, I might push it to, as I said, 18 months, and even giant breeds sometimes to 24 months. Anyway, it was a great question. Thanks for asking. And a year, depending, if it's a regular medium-sized dog, a year is fine. But if it's a much bigger dog, I would probably wait 18 months. All right. So let's see other questions. That was a good one. Small dog. I have a small dog, 10 pounds for years. He has chased his tail and at times squeals like having to give an anal gland cleaning. No one's been able to figure out the problem. So sometimes, there's more. Recently, the vet said it was a tie. Give me more. New vet thinks it's torn all. I'm not understanding that. Give me a little bit more information. What was a tie and what was torn? So let me know because I'd like to answer that. But there are dogs that are just tail chasers. It is a behavioral thing. I wonder what you should try to do is, first of all, get one of those cameras, like a Nest camera or something, and see if it happens when you're not home. And then what is your response when the dog does it? Is it getting some sort of reinforcement? Because when they're doing it, you're talking to them, you tell them to stop, you call them over, you're trying to distract them. And the dog learns that if I, like a zombie, run around and chase my tail, dad or mom's going to call me over and I'm going to get some attention. So it could be purely behavioral. It could be some pain somewhere. Anal glands would have been a good place to start. And some dogs are just like to chase. And they don't necessarily, first of all, they rarely catch it. Sometimes they do. And if they are catching it, then they bite at it. Maybe they feel it and they stop. So it stops themselves. But otherwise, it could be like we call it attention getting behavior. And some dogs just like to chase things. And that tail on the tip of the tail on the other end, they don't get it. That's not them. So all of a sudden something is flying around and they see it and they want to go after it. The more they turn around, the more it runs away from them. It's a game. And again, it's very important to know what type of issue it is, but usually it's not a medical problem with the tail. I mean, you'd have to do some nerve conduction velocity testing to see if there's a tingle or something going on back there. Usually it doesn't happen. All right, let's get some questions here. Define large, medium, 40-pound dog is smallish. Ah, okay. Ivy Blue, I love the question. Yeah, no. For me, a 40-pound bag is medium. A dog is medium. So small breeds are like small breeds, 10 pounds, 15 pounds or less. And those are the ones, by the way, that it's okay to neuter early because they're the ones that usually get deciduous teeth, but you got to wait until at least 6 months till all their adult teeth have erupted. That's important. 40 pounds to me is medium. So you get 25 to 50 pounds. That's a medium. You get 50, 55 and above. That's a large. You hit above 80, 90, 100. Now you're talking about giant breed. So one of my neighbors had these two gorgeous white dogs. They look like a great Pyrenees, but bigger. And they're called Pyrenean Mastiffs. The male was 225 pounds. The female was 160 pounds. And the male weighed more than I did. It's crazy. But these are big dogs. But once you get to know, the male was tough. His name was Rufus, and he was tough. And when I first met him, when we moved to the neighborhood, he was walking them, and he warned me, you know, be careful. And I went over. To me, that's a challenge. You don't tell a veterinarian who loves to get licked in the face that this dog is not going to be good. So, of course, I worked him, and I got him. And this dog would, when I would go to the house, they were neighbors. I would go to his house. He would jump with those big paws on my shoulders. It was so cute. Anyway, we're going to go on with more questions in a minute. I see JB has joined us. So don't go away. We'll break these a few minutes during the commercial break. I'm going to come back and we'll continue after that. Be back after these short messages. Be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Back here. And so the tie was a torn ACL. I'm not disagreeing. I'm not saying it's not an issue. But what I'm saying is I see hundreds of dogs and have seen over my career with torn ACLs. And there was I did not see a correlation between the ACL tear and tail chasing. So Eloise, Vicky, if you want to chime in on that. Now, does the torn ACL have to be repaired? Should be repaired? If it's causing limping and problems, absolutely yes. And if you want a good test, there would be the test. Let's get the ACL fixed, which needs to be done anyway. And if the tail chasing stops, then I'm wrong. But I don't think there's a correlation. But I think that the leg needs to be fixed anyway. So how young can you first bathe a pup? And the question at any time. In fact, I've taken, you know, little teeny pups that were 8 weeks, 6 weeks, and you hold them in your hand. You don't use a tub. You put them in the kitchen sink. You know, put them in, you're holding them through the bath. You let the water run gently, and you're petting them as you're doing it. The whole idea is you want to make it really fun. You want to have them enjoy it. And, you know, one thing I've seen, you can get like these little peanut butter dispenser things. It comes in a little packet, like when you go to a fast food and the ketchup and the mayonnaise come in that little packet, and you can actually squeeze the packet, let them lick the little peanut butter or some sort of really tasty thing while they're being bathed. They don't even think about the bath. They're licking that thing while you're washing them and you're making it fun. You might want to, I saw a great video where, you know, sometimes they don't like to lick it in the ears. What I do is also when I bathe animals, I bathe up to the neck. I don't necessarily like to push their head under the running water because they don't like it. So then what I do is I take some of the suds that I've created on the body and then I start doing the head and around the eyes and the face. And you don't just bombard them. And then also for when it comes to rinsing, instead of letting it under the water, take a little cup and just rinse the areas that you've gotten the soap on to clean, but you want to make it fun. From a medical perspective, it's not a bad thing. Obviously, you want to use coolest, warmest water. You don't want it hot. Do not use hot water. And don't you want ice cold either. Just cool water, stuff, you know, that you would like want to wash your hands in. And you just took a lepto shot. News on that. What about leptospirosis and the virus going around? Boy, got a lot of questions here. Yes, putting cotton in the ears can helpful because that you want to get soaked. That I agree with totally. All right. So the lepto, we had a big scare in some areas. And really, it's a lifestyle vaccine. It depends on the prevalence of the disease in the area you're living in or where in the area you're living in do these dogs usually pick up the infection. So for example, here in LA, it wasn't a problem if you're just dog lives in LA. It was if you go hiking, if you're in the mountains, wherever there are the wild rodents that are shedding this bacterium in their urine and feces. They are going ahead. They're defecating around rivers and streams. Then your dog is hiking. They start lapping up the water from the stream. That's how it was shed. Then we had a big scare of rats in public parks, especially in Santa Monica. And we were seeing an uptick of these cases of lepto. That seems to have died down. It's something you need to talk to your veterinarian. One thing I will tell you about the vaccine is that it used to be the one vaccine that seemed to cause most of the vaccine reactions that we would see. And they've changed the formulation of the vaccine, and we are not typically seeing that bad reaction as we have had in the past. So that's a good thing. It's a personal choice. If you think your dog is going to be at risk, if the dog is hanging with other dogs, a lot of the doggy daycares, the boarding facilities, even the grooming facilities are requiring it because they're worried, and I understand where they're coming from. It's not worth the risk. Look, it could be a deadly disease. So it really just depends on you, your attitude about vaccines, the likelihood that your dog might encounter the bug, the bacterium, and then you make the decision that way. Now, let's talk about the influenza. There's been no evidence yet that this is any one new type of organism, whether it's a bacterium, a virus, a mycoplasma, nobody really knows. The current thought trend is that it is a complex, that's why they call it CRIDC, canine respiratory infectious disease complex. It's just a combo. And in that combo, we have parainfluenza, which is usually associated, it's part of the annual distemper parvo vaccine, DA2PP, parvo, parainfluenza. Then you have the Bordetella. We've been doing that for years because that is endemic, at least here in LA. And now the influenza, not as much the H3N8, which was the older one. It's been several years on that one, but it's a newer H3N2. That seems to be the one that, you know, can cause the most illness. So the best we can do because of issues with comorbidity, if we can at least protect against three of whatever is in this complex, we will see more mild cases, maybe protection altogether. There has been definitely an improvement. We are not hearing about it that much anymore. I'm not seeing as many dogs coming in. I'm actually only working with one now that's got a persistent cough that was coming from a shelter. So it makes total sense. It could have been. It was a shelter rescue, still coughing. Dog, though, is happy, alert, playful, active. Lungs are clear. So who knows? It could be more of a tracheitis. So the recommendation is I am now recommending the influenza shot more than I used to. My own dogs, yes. I think it's smart. And again, the dog parks have signs up. The daycare facilities, the grooming parlors, the boarding facilities are all requiring the influenza as well. I think that's a good move. So is putting cotton in the ears for helpful? It always seems to get, it gets a little soaked, but no, it's a good idea. In fact, one thing I saw, a good friend of mine who does a lot of stuff on Instagram, she was also doing a bathing. She takes, instead of letting the water run down into the ear, she takes a moist cotton balls and just squeezes them into the ear. So at least the water gets down there and then she massages the ear, the stuff comes out. And you know, look, when that dog shakes its head, a lot of that crud is pulling out of there. So it doesn't bother me that much. All right. Chasing usually behavioral. So thank you. That's very similar to what I said. It's usually behavioral. It's medical if they chew it and then it gets injured. And then, of course, they're going to go after because the injury. And it's like a baby discovering their feet. So that could be. All right. Louise, excellent question. Thank you. It has nothing to do with ACL. I agree. It has nothing to do with the ACL. As I said, I've seen dozens upon dozens upon dozens of ACLs, and they're not presenting tail chasing. So I totally agree with you there. Ah, okay. So Librela, love Librela. So let's talk about that a little bit. Okay, Librela was introduced by Zoetis, the same folks that brought us Cytopoint and Apoquil, and Solensia, which is for the cats. That's been out a little longer. So it is an injection. It's a once a month. It goes by weight. And without getting too much into the science, it is actually specific for what we call OA, osteoarthritis pain. It, like Cytopoint, which attacks the interleukin 31 as it's released from the T helper cell, this attacks the mediators of actual pain. Now, unlike the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, which do have analgesic properties, but how do they help with analgesia? They help by decreasing the inflammation. So when there's, like, for example, in commercials for aspirin, they call it an analgesic. Actually, aspirin is not an analgesic. Aspirin is a nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory that helps reduce pain by decreasing inflammation because just the inflammatory response causes pain. Librela is different. Librela actually attacks the pain receptors and the substances that are delivered across the synapses from the nerves to the receptors. And it is the new science. It is actually, number one, attacking pain. Number two, it will also help with some inflammation. So what we're getting is it's a reverse. Whereas the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories are a number one anti-inflammatory, and then the side effect, the good part of that, is the pain relief. Whereas the Librela is really number one for pain, and in the process is also going to help a little bit with arthritis, I mean with inflammation. So it is great. The responses have been unbelievable. So you definitely want to talk to your veterinarian. Again, it's called Librela, and they have tremendous success. I'm very, very excited for this. We've been using it. I mean, when it first came out, I think I had 5 shots that first week. I mean, it's a game changer, and it's good for a month. It's one shot that's good for a month. And yeah, look, a lot of us have been using Adequin. Love Adequin. That is a little different. That's a PSGA polysulfated glycosaminoglycans. That is meant to support the actual joint health, the joint surface. It strengthens it, keeps the lubrication going. Definitely. This is not to replace something like Adequin, or if you're doing chondroitin or glucosamine or MSM, those are a must. And even to stay on your nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory. But unlike the NSAIDs, which you have to monitor because they can have effect on the liver, you can just keep doing it. It's great. 2 viruses not seen before, and there's no PCR. And I've been asked to submit my 3 dogs to the study. We'll keep us posted, because I know I've been talking to, I was at a lecture at the North American Vet Conference, VMX, listening to my friend Mike Lappin, who's at Colorado State. He's an internal medicine specialist, a subspecialty infectious disease. And his lab has also been studying, along with Scott Weiss over and Dave Needle. These are all these doctors that have been pretty well known that have been working on this new bug. So anyway, yeah, keep me posted. Let me know what you find. That's great. So far, they've been not able to isolate anything special. It says, research, many dogs are not doing well. That I have not heard. None of my patients have had a problem. It's not real. It's an arthritis shot, but it is osteoarthritis, but it reduces the pain. I wouldn't get it for the actual inflammation. For that, you still want to use the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, but it's great. Okay, about a trial for older pets to extend their lifespan. Your thoughts on that? There's a product out there that has done very well in testing. And it's the same, very similar. There's products on the human market that have been out for a while. It's called Leap Years. If it's not, it's in the process of being released, if not already. I love the science. I was reading up on NAD+. It's a nicotinamide, adenine, dinucleotide. It's some product that we have, but it's also giving more of it. And what that does is that helps eliminate the damage in old cells and reproducing the good cells. It's sort of causing healthy cells to be introduced into circulation and getting rid of the old ones that aren't doing any good for us anymore. And it's called NAD+. It's synesthetic. It's like it sort of helps get rid of the senility cells, the ones that are just old and not doing any good. So early science is good. As I said, it's been products like this have been on the market on the human side for a while. And interestingly, as I was reading up on Leap Years, I said, wait, that looks really good. I'm going to try the human stuff for me. So anyway, but again, it's very early in the game. So we need to give a little more time and see what's going on. And I think there's another product out there as well. You know, we used to use what we used in human medicine, and that was L-deprenyl. All right. It's called selegiline. And that seems to help a little bit also with the senility. But again, we see a lot of dementia, canine cognitive dysfunction syndrome. There's so many names for it. And I think this is going to show a lot of problems. All right. All right. That's all we have time for. I'm waving and waving. Thank you all for joining me. I got a full day ahead of me. I got to head out to this wedding. And that's it. Joint supplements will be any benefits when they get older. Yeah. Well, that's a good question. That's almost like when you take probiotic. Do you take it as a preventive also, or only when there's a problem? I think if you have a large breed dog who's probably over 6 or 7, there's no downside in my mind to using the supplements like the glucosamines, as I said, MSM, chondroitin. What I wouldn't recommend is NSAIDs, because those have potential side effects, especially with lengthened use. So those I would wait until you actually have clinical signs. But as far as a preventative, I go with the glycosaminoglycans, the PSGAGs. All right. A lot of good stuff. Of course, when the show is over, at the end of the show, I'm getting all these great questions. So anyway, stay tuned. Come next week. Save them. We'll talk about it next week. And have a wonderful week, everybody. And again, if you need something during the week, you can always get a hold of me here on Pet Life Radio. All your questions, they come to me, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com. And of course, here on Instagram, just, you know, ask away. You know I'll get back to you. Have a wonderful week. See you next week.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.